Hey, I'm Jake Brennan, and I want to tell you about Disgraceland, the award-winning music and true crime podcast that I host. Disgraceland tells the stories of musicians getting away with murder and behaving very badly. Fleetwood Mac, Nipsey Hussle, Cardi B, Ozzy Osbourne, Taylor Swift, Tupac, The Beatles, Amy Winehouse, Jay-Z, The Grateful Dead, and so many more. This is not the music history you've heard before. This is an uncensored, immersive look at the lives of musical icons as seen through the crimes they've committed or that have been perpetrated against them. Did Jerry Lee Lewis murder his fifth wife? What really happened to Sam Cooke in that seedy motel at 3 a.m.? And how did the Rolling Stones wind up sleeping with the First Lady? Wait, what? New episodes of Disgraceland drop every Tuesday with bonus episodes released on Mondays and Thursdays. So get in, buckle up, and join me in Disgraceland. Available right now, wherever you get your podcasts. Rock and roll.
Hi, this is Lowell Tolhurst, co-founder of The Cure.
And this is Budgie, co-founder of The Creatures, drummer with The Slits, and Susie and the Banshees.
Welcome to Curious Creatures.
Life after punk.
You may think you know the territory, but we drew the map. We have certainly played some strange gigs in our time, that's for sure. The other strange show I cannot forget, because you know it's one embedded in my mind, was the first time we played in Utah in America, and we played Salt Lake City.
Salt Lake City, yeah, okay.
Yeah, so, you know, for anybody who doesn't know, I guess, well, you know, Utah is kind of a different kind of place. Anyway, I don't think they got many shows at that time, so we were booked in to what was really the local rodeo place in Salt Lake City. And
I think I know it.
Right, so the dressing rooms will be familiar to you because they were actually where they kept the horses and other animals, and the floors were not floors, they were dirt. And
for that reason, we may not have actually spent much time in there.
Right, I think we should have known on the way in, the local promoter picked us up in his vehicle at the hotel, and we drove to the gig, and as we got to the front of the venue, he wound the window down to talk to the security guard who stopped him at the front, and he showed him his pass, and he said, well, who have you got in the car with you? And he said, I have the band. And the security guard sort of looked in the car and went, they don't look like the band to me. You know, I've had no idea what he expected us to look like, but, you know, we didn't fit the description, but we weren't carrying our guitars and drums and things with us. So we got in, we played the show, and everybody that was possibly in any way like any kind of music like ours from the whole state of Utah turned up because this was their show. So it was a mishmash of every kind of outsider in the audience, which was great. And they all started dancing. Well, the floor of the rodeo place was also of the same quality as the floor in the dressing room. It was dirt. And so about 10 minutes into the set, there was this huge cloud of dirt rising up above the audience. And eventually it was like fog. You couldn't see anybody. They couldn't see us. Our lights probably looked quite good because they were cutting through all this dust everywhere. So it was a very strange show.
Wow. I just remember like when you played Salt Lake City, it was outside. We were playing probably in the same Dust Bowl, and it was a long punishing set as we always did. Yeah. But I remember still being dry. I'm usually soaking wet. Back in Tokyo, I was like gasping for breath, and there were some people doing massage on your back. I was flat out on the floor, and they're trying to beat some life back into you because you've got to go back on for an encore. In Salt Lake City, it was like, I'm fine, but I was like probably totally dehydrated because, of course, it just evaporates, right?
Right, right.
Your
right,
sweat right. Just evaporates and you become salt, Mr. Salt Lake.
Wow, I didn't even realize that, but yes, you're right, it makes sense. So.
Similarly, in Colorado, Denver, Colorado.
Oh, right, yes. It's the mile high.
The altitude. Yeah, this kind of dizzy sort of weirdness. Talking about dizzy weirdness. I'm not sure if we ever played. We always were like moderate drinkers before we hit the stage,
right?
Except one time when our lighting tech, who shall remain nameless, but you know, we used to call him Darkness because he would. Hello, Darkness, my old friend. Tom, let's call him Tom.
Yeah, Tom Darkness,
which is very, very close to his real name. And Tom had a what he called the lounge. Now that the Lush Lounge was for post gig libations.
Oh, okay.
But right. Only on this particular night, and it could have been in Chicago, and I think it was, and I think we had My Life with the Thrill Kill Cult playing on this leg of the tour. And for some reason, the Lush Lounge opened early.
Oh, dear.
Just after soundcheck.
Oh, and dear. For disaster.
Yeah. It was a good recipe for cocktails. They were mostly tequila-based, if I remember correctly. And there were lots of them. And there was, you know, and there was a huge amount. Right. We thought, well, it's going to take us all night. This is our last show for a while, so we might as well get stuck in. And I don't think anybody was in any hurry to get back to the hotel between soundcheck and gig. And I do remember it was like, what song are we playing? And I don't know if the audience even noticed. I'm not sure they probably did, but we certainly struggled through that one. It was it was much of like trying to keep a straight face and counting the song and wondering if it was actually going to happen.
Yes, I have to confess we did. At one point, when we'd got to, you know, slightly more elevated stage, and we took our own caterers with us, so we didn't, you know,
took your own pie and chips with you.
Yes, we did. We took our own pie and chips and curries, and the caterers, I think they were called Eat Your Heart Out. They had a base behind the back of Hammersmith Odeon. Anyway, they decided halfway through one European tour, I think it was, that, you know, in the middle of soundcheck, what a good idea it would be to have the cocktail of the day, which they mixed because there was, you know, like 40 people on the road. They mixed in buckets, you know, and would bring side of stage and, you know, one day a banana daiquiri, and the next day, you know, Tom Collins, something, you know, all kinds of delicious cocktails, which meant the sound check stopped. Yeah, it wasn't good. At some point I had to say to myself, well, put my portion of the cocktail, just put it in the dressing room for after the show, because otherwise it wouldn't go very well.
I think this leads me quite nicely into that little gig that the Creatures played up in Seattle. We always went back to this little place. I think it's probably gone. It fell down in an earthquake. Is that even possible?
It might have got rained out in Seattle, because that has a lot of rain as well.
Well, it was apparently it met its demise anyway. But after, not until we'd played a few tours starting in Seattle, and anybody who went there would remember it, because behind the stage was the bar for some reason.
Wow. Okay.
And so the nearest spot to the bar, if you like, the serving port, was my kit. And so I remember just like, and I don't think I was drinking at the time, because I did go through like tours of just like, you know, no, not for me, not this tour. I want to remember it. And so they would be passing like vodka gimlets, you know, chilled to the right temperature for Madame, who was out front. And I just
over the top of your head,
lean backwards and just pass one down through the kit, you know, and gimlet quaffed, we would get into the next song. But it was a raucous affair. It was only about maybe 1,000, 2,000 tops capacity,
right?
But the bar was like rocking, man.
Especially if you're just sitting a couple of yards in front of it. Right?
I had to be really careful with my sticks, you know, because if I wielded them too far backwards, I'd knock somebody's drink over, and my life would not be worth living, you know.
Oh, no, I was going to remember you were talking about the bar being there and drinks being smashed. I remember we played in Perth in Western Australia for the first time, and we played a couple of gigs. In the same day, because we were doing well, and we had played a tour where we played like 23 shows, which is a lot, Australia, because, you know, there's not 23 big cities.
Now, if you don't believe us, go count them.
Right, right. And we played the show during the day or early evening. We played this nightclub late at night, and the owner of the club came to us. It was a middle-aged lady, and she said, please don't let them get on the tables. You know, please don't let them get on the tables, because all the glasses, you know, I have to buy new glasses every week if they get on the tables, right? Well, you know.
Like you have any say in it.
Right, right. So we said, well, yeah, sure, we'll do our best, you know, but we're not sure.
Don't worry. Don't worry.
And then, of course, they did get on the tables, and they got on the stage, and I think Matthew was with us then. So probably like 17 seconds early on, I think somebody took a swing at Matthew, and then our lighting guy got on, and it was mayhem. It was like, you know, what's that thing, like the Blues Brothers with the chicken wire, you know, in front of the stage. It was real, really chaotic. And afterwards, we said to her, you know, when she came to pay us or whatever, and said, oh, we're sorry about, you know, what happened at the show, you know, with everybody going. She said, oh, don't worry. She said, they don't think they've had a good time unless they get a bottle over the head.
You see, I think it's quite safe to say that our strangest gigs are going to be way back at the beginning of our lives, right? Because we traverse decades. And it's that you must have gone through the thing with the early Cure, when the Banshees first went to America and first landed in the town you are now speaking from.
Yeah.
The whiskey a go.
Yeah, we played the Whiskey, first gig ever. Yeah.
We played the Whiskey four nights on a row with a matinee. So.
Oh, no.
Back to the matinee scenario. So we played early evening.
Yeah.
They cleared the place out, changed the audience.
Yeah.
We had time to, if we were lucky, like towel ourselves down.
Right.
And then go back out for a second crack at it, you know.
Wow.
And
that's good.
It was great, but like we'd step out and there'd be sunshine out there, and there were like convertibles and people going like, "Hey man, you want to come down to my parents' house for a smoke?" And we're going like, "Huh? Why would you want to go to your parents' house for a smoke?" Because we had no idea.
No.
You know, it's like people were dressed in bin liners, you know, with a safety pin holding it sort of neatly in place. And we think, why? It's really hot.
Yeah.
And I do remember, I mean, after the third day of this kind of torture, you know, we were losing our minds. We were like crying between sets. I can't do this anymore. I can't. And we started, I remember carrying out like what was the rider. The rider for the uninitiated is the kind of the spread, the food, the drinks.
Yeah, so what you know, the victuals that you get the backstage.
Backstage there, laid out for to keep you amused. And we had like a pineapple, banana, and apples and orange. Had never seen fruit like it. So I remember carrying this bowl out of the door while all the convertibles went by with the reefer smoke billowing out.
Right.
And walking back down to the Tropicana, which was next to the old Duke's place. And the Tropicana was like on.
It's where every band ever stayed there, right? Yeah.
Yep. They had a boa constrictor on reception in case you stepped out of line.
Jeez.
But I remember carrying this all the way down, like in case I dropped anything off it, because it was like precious food.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was crazy. Just the things that you did. Yeah, you know, I suppose that's why we kind of made a second home of the US, really, because we seem to be there every, if not twice a year, through the 80s, you know, just gigging everywhere, and the sights that you saw we'd never seen before.
Yes, it's quite an education for
poor little boys from the
young English boys. Yes, yes.
And it's been the ruin of many a poor boy.
Many poor boy, and I
know
them all. Curious Creatures is created and presented by Vol Tolhurst and Budgie.
Producer Joe Wong.
Producer and audio designer Dan Didier.
Executive producer Mark Cates.
Associate producer Sophie Spare.
Social media Margie Taylor.
Art and logo design Justin Thomas Kay.
Music production Jackknife Lee.
Curious Creatures is on the web, and you can access us at www.curiouscreaturespodcast.com.
I love saying www.curiouscreaturespodcast.com. And you can reach us on Instagram, Facebook, at Curious Creatures Official, Twitter, at Cure Creatures.
To find more of the best music podcasts, visit doubleelvis.com or follow at doubleelvis on Instagram and at doubleelvisfm on Twitter. Curious Creatures is a production of LXB LLC 2021.